Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. I'm your host, Jim Madonna. You know that this is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. So let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. Today we've got a real special show for you. We're going to meet with Bill Cease, who's going to tell us about an old-time miner prospector called Leon Trombley. But just before we get into that, I want to tell you about one of my six favorite sponsors. And that, of course, is Oxford Assaying and Refining, the people who are responsible for giving away a silver ingot each during the contest of Alaska Gold Trails. In addition to that, I want to point out that Oxford Assaying and Refining is known as your precious metals people, and they have a large line of gift ideas for you in the upcoming festive season. And that, of course, includes gold and silver ingots, gold nuggets, and jewelry. So keep them in mind. They're located at 208 Wendell Street, and their phone number is 456-3967. By the way, folks, I also want to acquaint you with their special quote line, which is 452-7858. If you want the daily prices on gold, silver, and platinum, their number, once again, is 452-7858. But for special information on those gifts for that someone special, the number is 456-3967. So give them a call, won't you? Over there at Oxford Assaying and Refining. And don't forget, tell them you heard Jim Madonna talking about them right here on KFAR's Alaska Gold Trails. Now, let's start our first session with Bill Cease and the history of Leon Trombley. This is Jim Madonna on Alaska Gold Trails, and I'm here this afternoon with Bill Cease, and Bill's going to give us some information regarding one of the old-timers that came to Alaska and discovered gold in one of the tributaries to the Yukon River area. So with that, hello, Bill. How are you today?
We're doing just fine, thank you.
And tell us, Bill, give us a little of your background. Where were you raised?
I was born in Central California and raised, and eventually started, once I graduated out of high school, moving north.
Yeah, where? What high school was that?
What high school was in Santa Cruz, California, Soquel High.
Uh-huh. Did you say you started moving north? What do you mean, you came up through Oregon and up through Northern California, Oregon, in that area?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Started out in California, moved up into Oregon. I worked in Oregon in the woods, like most people in Oregon, working in the woods in the logging industry.
Uh-huh.
And what I did was planted trees in logged out areas and where forest fires happened.
Uh-huh.
I'd go in there and plant new trees.
I see. So in your reforesting efforts, then this meant that you, what, planted trees by the thousands and hundreds, is that it? Hundreds of thousands?
Hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
Millions.
Mm-hmm. And then you lived more or less a kind of an outdoor frontier type livelihood there, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Did you live out of tents or did you live in a motel? How did you live?
I lived mostly out of tents up in the mountains, wherever mm-hmm. the jobs were. We lived mm-hmm. in work camps.
Mm-hmm. Were you a foreman or were you just one of the hands?
No, I was one of the foremen. I was a foreman for a long time,
mm-hmm.
for 10 years.
Tell us what attracted you towards Alaska.
Well, I'd been running up down mountains for a period of 10 years, running up down valleys, streams, mountaintops, and going, there's got to be more than just trees on these mountains. And I got interested in rocks mm-hmm. and wanted to know more and learn more about the rocks. Because I've always heard about people making it in gold.
Mm-hmm. And is that what, did Alaska have that gold mining plum hanging there for you? Is that what drew you to Alaska?
Yeah, pretty uh-huh. much. It did.
Well, before that, then you were probably already interested in outdoor activities, is that correct?
Mm-hmm, very much.
Yeah.
Hunting, fishing. I wanted to learn about trapping, but didn't pursue that one.
Uh-huh. You did a lot of prospecting.
Yeah.
I understand you met quite a colorful chap when you were a young boy, a relative of one of your mates when you were running around in grammar school. What was the story behind that?
Yeah, if you recall, we were well, probably 8-10 years old, running around playing. And this old shank, well, old, if back in 1957, was brand new. This nice green shiny Cadillac pulled up with the old Texas Longhorns strapped to the hood. And my friend says, this is my uncle from Alaska. He's down here to visit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then when you're 10 years old, you didn't think much about an old Alaskan or a gold miner. You know, it was just he had a nice car and he seemed to be doing okay.
Mm-hmm. What was his name?
His name was Leon Trombley.
Leon Trombley?
Yes.
Well, Leon Trombley was going to play a role in your life later on. Tell us how, when you came to Alaska, tell us what happened that Leon Trombley's name re-entered your life.
Well, I came up in 1979, the summer of 79, and proceeded, got some work up here, eventually moved down in Anchorage, was working down in Anchorage, and my friend had called me from California. And he told me that his uncle had some gold claims up in Alaska.
Then this was Leon Trombley's nephew.
This was Leon's mm-hmm. nephew, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he wanted to know if I wanted to go prospecting. And we didn't consider prospecting. We considered it treasure hunting. We wanted to go find out what Leon Trombley did mm-hmm. in Alaska. So we began the research on Leon Trombley. Basically through the family. The families had letters. They knew where he'd been, and he'd also had a couple wives up here.
At the same time or separately?
Separately.
Oh, that's nice.
Through the years, he'd had a couple wives, yes. But,
So
we did our research. It took a matter from 79 to 1982 before we'd finally figured out where he'd been mining, where he'd been working, and put it all, pieced it all back together
mm-hmm.
through the family and friends.
Uh-huh.
And in 1982, we felt confident enough to go looking to see where Leon Trombley had spent the greater part of his life,
mm-hmm.
a matter of 30 years, better than 30 years of his life out there. And we...
And where was that, Bill?
That, the exact location.
Yeah, what was the name of the general area?
The general area is the Cochrane Hills.
The Cochrane Hills.
The Cochrane Hills, west
uh-huh.
of the town of Tanana.
Uh-huh.
And very remote... Very remote. The mm-hmm. the only way in is by aeroplane.
Mm-hmm. Is that relatively close to Malozi Hot Springs?
Very close to the Malozi Hot uh-huh. Springs area. Very close.
And you went out, you put together a package and a package of equipment, and did you and your partner go out, or did you have his nephew? Did you?
Yeah, Leon's nephew, Ken Frederick, came up. At the time, he had also moved up into the Anchorage area, and we were working around getting our grub stake together. Anchorage was going pretty strong at the time for work. And in the summer of 82, in August, we flew out there. We felt it was a better time of the year to go out there. The trees are losing their leaves, and winter is, you know, it's cooling down and freezing up where a man can see
mm-hmm.
and move in the woods pretty good. We went out and spent 2 weeks out there, and with the research that we had and all the maps and letters from the family, that we were able to land within a quarter mile of his cabin where Leon had lived.
Did you find his cabin?
Walked right to it.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit quickly about the things that you found. Did you find tools? You find the cabin?
Yeah.
How was it? Was it in a state of preservation or had it been deteriorated pretty badly?
No, surprising. The cabin had been empty in a matter of 25 years and it was in very good shape.
Mm-hmm.
His clothes were hanging on the walls. His maps were on the walls. Picks, shovels, pans, dog sleds. It was very, very good camp. Of course, it had been pilfered by the animals. But enough that we were able to gather a lot more information mm-hmm. as to what Leon did out there.
Did you find areas where he had mined or anything like that?
Yeah, we had found a lot of his test holes up and down the creeks and up and down the valleys where he had tested. Interesting, when we first got into the area, we had first thing we did was clean the cabin out so we can set our camp up
mm-hmm.
so we could be comfortable for the duration. And in the process of cleaning the cabin, we found this chunk of gold stuck between a couple logs there, and that gave us that confirmed our
the suspicions
or our mysteries that he was after gold out here. Mm-hmm. Not only did he trap, but he was also getting gold too.
Well, with that, Bill, let's take a break for just a minute. We'll come back, and I want to hear, when we come back, I'm sure the audience would like to hear the history of Trombley and his activities there and about his life.
That's the best I can.
I like talking about the folks located at 1916 South Cushman. Who are they? That's Tip Top Chevrolet Buick. Tip Top Chevrolet Buick has been in business for 32 years. It has been owned and operated by three generations of Ginthers, and everybody knows that Robbie Ginther is the general manager today. Their phone number over there is 452-8211. That's 452-8211. Tip Top Chevrolet, located at 1916 South Cushman. You know, many times I've liked to do Robbie's special ad, and it goes something like this. You've never driven anything like the full-size Chevy pickup available right now at Tip Top Chevrolet. It's the hardest working pickup with the longest regular cab in Chevrolet history, and it's got a new chassis system, a new aerodynamic shape with a new rear wheel anti-lock brake system and Instatrack shift on the fly on the four-wheel drive. The full-size Chevy pickup, it's new, it's exciting, and it's here in Fairbanks at Tip Top Chevrolet, your Chevy Team Alaska dealer. Drop on over and take a look, and don't forget, folks, buckle up with Tip Top Chevrolet. And while you're over there, tell them you heard Jim Madonna talking about them right here on Alaska Gold Trails.
456-5500, Real Estate Hotline. 456-5500, Real Estate Hotline. No hard sell, no hassle, all the info, all the time. 456-5500, Real Estate Hotline. Call the hotline.
Many times people have asked me, what does Macaulay's Reaper Graphics do? Well, they reprograph. That's what one of my contest winners said as an ad for Macaulay's Reprographics. But in addition to that, they have for sale surveying equipment, and they also lease surveying equipment. They do reproductions on maps and other types of field investigative materials. In addition to that, they also have a wide variety of drafting equipment, and as well as field equipment such as hip chains and compasses. So for anybody who's doing field work who needs reproductive materials and equipment for their line of work, they want to contact Alfred Skondovich or Rebecca Macaulay over there at Macaulay's Reprographics. They're located on Gaffney Road at 721. Their phone number is 452-8141. Remember, their location once again is 721 Gaffney. Phone number 452-8141.
What are you making for dinner tonight? Well, Interior Alaska Fish Processors has a huge selection of whatever type of main entree you desire. Prices 30 to 40% below grocery store prices. That's right, 30 to 40% cheaper. This week's special, whole Washington-grown frozen fryers by the case, only 69 cents a pound. Try their wide selection of smoked seafoods, pork chops, prawns, and so much more at prices you won't believe. Interior Alaska Fish Processors, now open at 2400 Davis Road Extension. Look for their sign and save, save, save!
C&L Pawn Shop at the corner of Gaffney and Cushman is the most unpredictable variety store in Fairbanks. Now, folks, that's an understatement. It's more like having a giant garage sale in one room, and I've said that lots and lots of times to you. One-stop shopping will get you everything. Just to give you an idea, let me list a few items. Jewelry, clocks, stereos, headphones, guns, scopes, winches, propane bottles, tools, hats, musical instruments, cameras, TVs, radios, typewriters, and the list goes on and on. In fact, you can get anything at B&L Pawn. B&L traditionally has offered tremendous savings, but in addition, if you tell Killer you heard it on KFAR, she'll even sweeten the deal. And if you tell her you heard it from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails, she'll even sweeten it more. That's B&L Pawn, corner of Gaffney and Cushman. Their phone number is 452-6491. They're open 9 to 7, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 on Saturday, and 12 to 5 on Sunday. And remember, tell Killer you heard it here on Alaska Gold Trails, and she'll sweeten the deal.
How does a credit union vary from a traditional bank? Well, you see, at North Country Credit Union, they exist for just one reason: to serve their members, and they do it right. Loan officers Bruce and Donna in Fairbanks or Leitha in North Pole do it all. They'll sit down with you and give you the personal service that you deserve. Before you buy, see North Country Credit Union. Do it. Two locations, First and Cowles, and in the Town and Country Mall in North Pole.
I'm back here now with a private interview with Bill Cease, and he's telling us about one of the old-timers in Alaska who prospected and mined in one of the creeks near Malozy Hot Springs in the Cochrane Hills of Alaska. Bill, once again, what's the chap's name?
Leon Trombley.
Leon Trombley. And Bill, tell us about the life of Leon. Where was he from? Where was he raised? What kind of area?
Leon came from the Midwest, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
We believe he was raised up there in Missouri. And he'd grown up, and eventually he'd gone to college to the Colorado School of Mines in Colorado. Got a degree in mining. And apparently he had worked, from what we know from the family, he had worked his way up to Alaska. Took several years, of course. He worked his way through Canada, prospecting, and being a mining engineer in Canada, made some successful finds in Canada, and he kept on moving further north. He finally ended up in Alaska.
Well, tell us about these successful finds. What was so successful what happened to those successful finds?
The successful finds, of course, were he was working for other companies. He wasn't working for himself, so it was successful for them,
mm-hmm.
and it added to his fame or
credentials,
knowledge of
huh?
credentials, yes,
mm-hmm.
into the mining fields. And he did come up into the Fairbanks area, and he got his foot in the doors up here in Fairbanks, working for some of the better-known companies back in the 40s and the 30s from the Fairbanks area.
Mm-hmm.
And his job, he had signed on with one of the companies to be the prospect to go out and locate minerals, mineable minerals for these companies, which he had done.
What company was he working for here? The main company.
The company that we know the best was the Olson Brothers Mining Company,
mm-hmm.
who had spent many years up in the Manly, the Melozina Hot Springs area, Tanana, the Ruby. They were all over in those parts. They had spent, they had done a lot of mining up in there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where Leon worked up in those areas for him, locating mineable minerals.
Well, what were the conditions of employment for Leon with the Olson brothers then?
Well, the conditions, which does exist today, it does exist. Most of your prospectors or miners that went out and did location work for a company or a large company, they would sign a contract. And the contract would state that while working for the company, you didn't stake any ground or locate any minerals for yourself within a 10-year period.
Following the employment.
Following the employment,
mm-hmm.
termination of your employment. And so this was almost a standard rule throughout most mining companies that I know of.
And so they sent him into where?
And they sent him into the Cochrane Hills and into what we call the Big Malozy and the Little Malozy. He was up in those mountains there. And he had made a fairly nice discovery for the Olson brothers then. And that was in the early 40s or late 30s and early 40s, where he had made a discovery, and they moved in their equipment and mined the area.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was before the war then?
This was before the war. They had mm-hmm. set up a mine and started working out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, fortunately, or unfortunately, the war started, And like most folks in Alaska or anywhere in our U.S., they joined the service to help our country.
Mm-hmm.
This was when Leon Trombley pulled stakes and went into the war,
mm-hmm.
joined the service.
When did he come back to Alaska?
He came back into Alaska right after the war, I would say in 1944, is where our records show, in
mm-hmm.
1944, and continued prospecting in the same area.
The Cochrane Hills.
Yeah. Back mm-hmm. to the Cochrane Hills, where he had got to know the area pretty good and very, very well out there.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he enjoyed it because he went right back out there.
Mm-hmm. And he had some adventures out there. He built his cabin, and apparently, and stocked it. Tell us about his, you apparently have the information regarding how he prospected the area. Can you explain the process that he used? The simple process.
The simple process he used was drift mining process. And that was to get on, all his work was done in the winter time when the ground was frozen, where a man could travel up and down the rivers and sink a shaft right down the middle of the river, or mm-hmm. through the river bed. In the wintertime, and that's how he did his prospecting, was going up sampling the gravel bars on the rivers and the bends and the oxbows.
Mm-hmm.
And he had spent, on that particular claim, which he didn't stake until 1954.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a 10-year span after the war.
Mm-hmm.
He felt he wasn't obligated to the company, the Olsen brothers, to their contract had ended. It had been a set time of 10 years. So he went back into this area and proceeded prospecting by drift mining. Let's see, from 1954 till 1958, he had prospected. And all of his paperwork indicated that he sunk drifts up the creeks or up the river beds and up the benches.
Mm-hmm.
And best we can...
Many numbers of shafts then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Very... lots of shafts.
And the chances are the audience would like to know that these shafts were generally through this frozen ground and dropped to bedrock where the pay laid in concentration. And that the gold was, drift miners would then start migrating out laterally from that central shaft, following the pay streak and collecting the gravels. Now, you, in a previous conversation we had, you pointed out that he used only a small piece of equipment or small sluices, or what kind of equipment did he use to extract the gold? It wasn't very large equipment at all, was it?
No. What his mining equipment consisted of a shovel. A match to start a fire for his drift.
Mm-hmm. And how would that, tell us about that particular part of it?
Well, what he would do is he'd go around, if we drop back to 1929, there was a forest fire in the area, so he had plenty of standing timber, kiln-dried timber,
mm-hmm.
which was excellent for starting a drift, or a fire for a drift. What he'd do mm-hmm. is chop up a couple of these trees in the 3-foot lengths or shorter, and he'd stack up all this kiln-dried wood in a pile and let it burn.
Mm-hmm.
3-4 hours, whatever it take, maybe even 8 hours. And he'd remove, after the fire had burned out, he'd remove the ashes, what we call mucking it out. He'd
mm-hmm.
muck it out and then dig down as far as you could with a pick and shovel.
Oh, so then the fire would thaw it down and he would muck that out. Okay.
Right, the fire would thaw the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd muck it. And most of the guys then, they would take, for each foot they went down, 1 foot by 4 foot, depending upon the size of their hole, they would take that whole foot of ground, 4 foot by 4 foot by 1 foot deep, and they'd run it through what they call the rocker box.
Mm-hmm.
What he'd do is dig out all this ground, once he got through the muck and everything else, when he got into the gravel, he'd load this up on a dog sled and take it home for the night and sit in his cabin and rock. He would set up his rocker box and rock the material
mm-hmm.
to see if there was enough pay in that yard of ground to warrant digging further in the hole
mm-hmm.
or to chase the color he was chasing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how all of his prospecting was done was...
That was all, not only his prospecting, but his mining as well.
That was also his method of taking and recovering the gold out, was by a rocker box. That was the biggest piece of equipment he did have out there.
Now, he also had a partner, not a partner in the sense that he was a partner in mining, but just a friend that stayed with him. What was that? What was the situation there?
Yeah, he had... It's like... You get out into the bush, it's pretty hard out there, and it's good to have what we call a partner out there with you. While his partner wasn't a mining partner, he was just a man that he'd taken in, an Eskimo, to go in and he also not only mined, but he trapped for the fox, the hides, and the furs out there. He'd also set a trap line in the wintertime. And he met what we know as Snowshoe Slim, who is a trapper, and they buddied up for about a 15-year period. They had buddied up into this adventure out there. In essence, it was what they would do is if one man was watch each other's back, if trouble came along, they would, you know, you have somebody to help you out of your situation.
Well, tell us about, did any trouble come up?
Yeah, they did. In the summer of, it'd be the winter, the spring breakup of 1962, the snow was melting, the rivers were breaking up, the ice, everything was starting to move out. And Leon had an airplane. He'd flown in and out. That was his main transportation, was by airplane. So he had been successful somewhere to have his own airplane. And that spring they were cleaning up their camps, getting everything winter, he was getting ready to put it away for the summer. And apparently the bears came out early that year, and it was a very heavily populated with grizzly bears in that particular area. And the story goes, as we know it, they got mauled. The two of them had gotten severely mauled by the bear before they got out that year. Leon apparently was in pretty bad shape, but Snowshoe Slim, his partner, got him to the airplane. They'd killed the bear, and the bear chewed them both up pretty good. I guess it must have been a heck of a fight. And they were got to the airplane, was flying out, was headed back in the Fairbanks, and they had lost control of the airplane. Leon was flying the airplane and apparently was in bad shape, and they'd crashed the airplane. And, of course, being the wintertime, there was lots of snow. The airplane wreck didn't hurt anybody or any worse than what they were already from the bears. And Snowshoe made sled of sorts to haul Leon out of there. He was in too bad a shape to walk. So Snowshoe Slim built a sled and pulled him into Tanana, to the city of Tanana, which took him 2 days and two nights of walking at 20. Who knows, at that time, 10 below or 20 below zero, he'd made it into Tanana. And from there, they had flown him into the Fairbanks Hospital here,
Now, I want to take a break for just a minute, Bill, and then we'll come back. We want to hear about the kind of success you suspect that Leon had out there.
Okay.
Whether it's an auto, light truck, motorhome, or big rig, for the best service in town, it's Gabe's Truck and Auto Repair. And that's not just my opinion, folks. The Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce gave Gabe's Truck and Auto their prestigious Raving About Fairbanks Award for providing the best vehicle service in Fairbanks. Gabe's has two large shops and eight mechanics on hand to serve you. And you know, with that much attention, you will get fast, courteous service and have your vehicle back in a hurry. There are a couple of new services that Gabe's Truck and Auto is currently offering. For example, they have two new transmission specialists on hand. And a new automatic transmission department just now initiated. In addition to that, they have a new lube facility, the fastest lube in town, about the same time it requires for you to drink a hot cup of coffee. And I want to make one point that I have made on many, many previous radio shows. I don't want you to forget about Gabe's towing service. He has three wreckers available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Getting a tow is as easy as calling 456-6156. Now, folks, you might want to write that number down and put it in your glove box. That's 456-6156. You can turn your rag into a ride at Gage Truck and Auto, located at off Van Horn Road near Metro Field. Or give them a call. Once again, 456-6156.
Alaskan presents another Alaska myth. Shattered, the myth of Alaskan weather. Always severe and always, always cold. One myth maker tells of weather so cold, her down coat flew south for the winter.
Hey, come back here, chicken.
It's also a myth that Alaskan's total long distance service is expensive. Our complete service guarantees that you can have it all every time you call. Inexpensively, with Alaskan, the one you call on.
Many times people have asked me, what does Macaulay's Reprographics do? Well, they reprograph. That's what one of my contest winners said as an ad for Macaulay's Reprographics. But in addition to that, they have for sale surveying equipment, and they also lease surveying equipment. They do reproductions on maps and other types of field investigative materials. In addition to that, they also have a wide variety of drafting equipment, and as well as field equipment such as hip chains and compasses. So for anybody who's doing field work who needs reproductive materials and equipment for their line of work, they want to contact Alfred Skondovich or Rebecca Macaulay over there at Macaulay's Reprographics. They're located on Gaffney Road at 721. Their phone number is 452-8141. Remember, their location once again is 721 Gaffney. Phone number 452-8141.
Fly high in style with a pair of Ray-Ban Ambermatic or Glacier-type sunglasses from Aviator Supply. Get a leather jacket or T-shirt. Pick up a coffee mug or a special gift for someone. Aviator Supply has instructional videos ranging from the novice to the air transport pilot and instructional books on all King courses. You can get all this and more at Aviator Supply in Washington Plaza Mall.
Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Banks. They're your friends. You know, folks, Mount McKinley Savings Bank has been around for a good many years. In fact, Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank has been serving the people and the businesses of Fairbanks since 1965. Being a mutual bank, Mount McKinley has no stockholders. Rather, it is managed by a board of trustees for the benefit of its depositors. Consequently, Mount McKinley has been a community leader in paying high interest rates to their depositors since 1965. But one thing that I really want to talk about today is the over 55 Ask Mount McKinley about their prime time account. Let me list a few items here. Services provided in this prime time account, if you're over 55, interest at 5.25% per annum, compounded daily for an effective annual yield of 5.47%. Checking, no service charges, no minimum balance, and 200 free checks. Fees waived on traveler's checks, money orders, and money wire transfers. That's Mount McKinley Mutual Savings Bank. Where are they located? They're located at 530 4th Avenue. Their phone number is 452-1751. And don't forget, folks, tell them that you heard Jim Madonna talking about them right here on KFAR on Alaska Gold Trails.
We were talking about Leon Trombley's experience with the bear and trying to fly out. He crashed, and his partner pulled him in on a makeshift sled into Tanana. Apparently, Leon recovered from the bear attack. Is that correct?
Yes, Leon recovered real well from his bear attack. But fortunately, his partner, Snowshoe, had, from the story we know, had frostbitten both of his legs very severely, and they were going to amputate the legs. And being a trapper, gold miner, that just was unheard of. You don't cut a man's leg off because you end his career. Well, his career was basically, he felt it was ending, and The story we were told that he left the Fairbanks Hospital and went on uptown and spent his remaining days uptown at one of the local establishments there. And that was the end of Snowshoe Slim that we know of. We've never been able to find out for sure. But Leon, apparently, there was something I might also add in, before I go too much further, in 1958, Leon Trombley brought in a drill rig out there and began to map the valley coming up, drilling his pay and recording, because his intentions was to get a mining outfit in there to mine the ground. He was a prospector, not a miner, and he wanted somebody to mine the ground for him, so he was collecting his data. Well, fortunately, he lost his good partner, and he was very distraught over that, and he flew back out, went back to his claims, and from the story we know, he took all the equipment, dogs, everything that was any evidence at all, and put it in one of his workable shafts. Mm-hmm. He didn't store it in there. He put everything in there and threw dynamite in there and blew it shut. Mm-hmm. That was it. He wasn't going back. And his nephew, who I went to school with, says that Leon came out and was looking for investors to go back in to mine the property. Mm-hmm. So he was out looking for investors. In the course of the time he was out looking for his investors, he went to Cordova, where he had a brother, Dewey Trombley. And Dewey was working the Cordova house, was bartending down there. And his brother came back in from the area, from the mine there, and says, well, the heck with working for somebody. He says, let's buy this place. And Leon Trombley went into his pocket or into a stash bag and brought out the money, and he bought the Cordova house, bar, restaurant, hotel, and liquor store. Paid cash for that. And in the course of from 62 to 64, which was a pretty short time, he bought the bar. He bought everything in 1962. And from 62, for the next couple of years, he invested into fishing boats. He started helping, getting to know the local folks that were needing of help, and he started sponsoring fishing boats. And so he was not in any way hurting for any money that we can recollect.
Do you think that the money for the bar and liquor store and hotel and all, do you think all that came from the gold mining that he performed up in the Cochrane Hills?
Yes,
you think
very
so?
Much so, because we were, his ex-wife, who is still alive, living in Seattle, wrote to her on any information that she had on Leon Trombley. And she sent us all of his letters, accumulated letters of 30 years of prospecting in that area. Mm-hmm. And we read those letters, and one of his letters said that he was getting closer and closer to the source. Well, that was in 1958. Mm-hmm. He came out in 1962 with, apparently had some gold in his pocket, to buy the Cordova house and the hotel and the liquor store.
Tell us about Leon's life after he bought the liquor store and the bar.
Well, after he bought the liquor store and the bar, and I don't think, and talking to Joe Trombley, who is the great nephew of Leon, who lived and was going to school in Cordova at the time, Joe Trombley, and he would, in later years, of course, told us the stories about Leon, how he spent his last remaining years, that he never recovered from the loss of his partner. Mm-hmm. He said he never recovered from that, and from that point, he was very successful. He had money in his pocket, but it was eating at him, like, you know, you lose your best friend, and that he never recovered from that. So he, unfortunately, got into drinking pretty, pretty heavy, and he didn't have the desire to go back. He was, mm-hmm. he kept telling everybody he was looking for a new partner, mm-hmm. but he could not, he couldn't replace the partner that he'd already had. So I think that he just kind of gave up on it. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to go back, But like I said, he couldn't find the right person to go back with him, somebody he could trust to go back out there with him.
So he just continued drinking it.
So he just basically sat around the Cordova house and did some fishing and did lots of drinking, a lot of drinking.
Think
and
he drank himself to death?
Well, according to Joe, that...
It probably contributed to it.
It contributed very much to his gold mine in the sky, we might say.
Well, tell us, Bill.
Let him into that.
Tell us, you've been up there. You find it peaceful up there. Do you still go prospecting up there, looking for perhaps the shaft with the equipment and the materials in it, and looking for the gold pay streak and perhaps the lode deposit that Trombley might have been searching for and found?
Yeah, I've been in there. I've been going in and out of the area since 1982, and I have found a lot of the evidence and a lot of information that he has left out there. And putting it all together and following his annual labors and the letters that he wrote out to his family, I was able to follow his footprints pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And it did lead me up to what he said in his letter was his last working camp,
mm-hmm.
where he, as a matter of fact, in that last working camp, what it was a tent,
mm-hmm.
tent cabin, tent frame, mm-hmm. and in the tent frame was the rocker box, a wood stove, pick shovels, and his whole camp was right mm-hmm. there still, and.
You're thinking one more season that you might put it together in its final note?
I believe so.
Well, good. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to look forward to hearing from you after next season to see if indeed you found the mother lode. And I want to thank you for participating with me in this private interview about Leon Trombley, Bill.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Jim. And
how does a credit union vary from a traditional bank? Well, you see, at North Country Credit Union, they exist for just one reason, to serve their members, and they do it right. Loan officers Bruce and Donna in Fairbanks or Leatha in North Pole do it all. They'll sit down with you and give you the personal service that you deserve. Before you buy, see North Country Credit Union. Do it. Two locations, First and Cowles, and in the Town and Country Mall in North Pole.
Well, by golly, that's going to do it for Alaska Gold Trails for this Thursday afternoon, James.
It will for a fact there, Tom. You know, we do have a few minutes before the top of the hour and news time, and if anybody has anything of an open phone nature, now would be the time to get in at 479-8255, because we're going to have a guest in the next hour.
Exactly.